Tonight, several developing stories as we come on the air. The new threat against the U.S. Capitol. The Capitol Police issuing a bulletin about a possible militia plot to storm the Capitol as early as tomorrow. The House now scrapping its Thursday session amid the warning. What we're learning tonight, as just today, the commanding general of the D.C. National Guard testified that he waited 3 hours, 19 minutes before being allowed to send forces in to help in the middle of the riots at the Capitol. Rachel Scott, live on the Hill tonight. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, for the first time in front of the cameras in days, apologizing but saying he will not resign after three women have accused him of misconduct, saying, "I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. I deeply apologize," adding, "I feel embarrassed by it." Reaction already coming in tonight. President Biden blasting Texas and Mississippi for lifting their mask mandates and allowing businesses back to 100% capacity. At least 11 states easing restrictions. The president calling it, quote, "a big mistake and Neanderthal thinking." And Dr. Anthony Fauci weighing in on this late today. You'll hear from him as well. As the average number of daily cases now increases from a week ago. Also news on vaccinations across this country. And with the president setting a deadline to vaccinate all teachers by the end of the month. First Lady Dr. Jill Biden making the case today after teaching over Zoom herself. Mary Bruce with some of America's teachers tonight. A base with American troops under attack in Iraq. At least 10 rockets targeting U.S. forces. And these images tonight now being reviewed by investigators, showing the vehicle where the rockets were launched from. Ian Pannell reporting from Iraq tonight. And news coming in on the Tiger Woods crash investigation. The Sheriff's Department executing a search warrant involving the SUV and its black box.
From ABC News World Headquarters in New York, this is World News Tonight with David Muir.
Good evening. It's great to have you with us here on a very busy Wednesday night. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo coming before the cameras today. His apology, his words, and the fierce reaction tonight. But we're going to begin tonight with that alarming new bulletin that warns of a new threat against the U.S. Capitol, a possible militia plot to storm the Capitol as early as tomorrow. And after what we all witnessed on January 6th, authorities are now taking this intelligence very seriously. Tonight, the Capitol complex still surrounded by fencing topped with razor wire, some 5,000 National Guard troops on duty. We've learned the House has now scrapped its session tomorrow after the warning. Police say they're aware of a possible plot by an unidentified militia group on March 4th, which, of course, is tomorrow. And the warning comes as just today we heard from the commanding general of the D.C. National Guard. He testified that during the attack on the Capitol in January, that he waited 3 hours, 19 minutes before being allowed to send forces in to help fend off the rioters. ABC's Rachel Scott on the Hill tonight with this new threat and authorities who say we must take it seriously.
Tonight, the nation's capital on high alert. Officials warning domestic terrorists are plotting another attack on the Capitol tomorrow. The alleged plans uncovered by the FBI and Department of Homeland Security. In an intelligence bulletin overnight stating an unidentified group of militia violent extremists had discussed plans to take control of the U.S. Capitol and remove Democratic lawmakers. That threat linked to a far-right conspiracy theory pushed by QAnon, falsely claiming Donald Trump will assume the presidency tomorrow on March 4th. Tonight, Capitol Police beefing up security around the complex. But lawmakers are still trying to get to the bottom of what happened on January 6th in the first place. After a frantic call for help from the Capitol Police Chief, it took more than 3 hours for the Defense Department to send in the D.C. National Guard. At a Senate hearing today, the commanding general, William Walker, telling lawmakers he felt frustrated that his hands were tied.
At that point, seconds mattered, minutes mattered, and I needed to be ready to get them there as quick as possible.
When the green light was finally given, Walker says they arrived within 18 minutes, but it was too late. Rioters had already stormed the building. So today, lawmakers from both parties asked, why the delay?
I just keep thinking of the hours that went by and the people who were injured.
All agreed that once requested, it took far too long for the National Guard to arrive.
General Walker said senior Army generals were concerned about optics.
The Army senior leaders did not think that it looked good. It would be a good optic. They further stated that it could incite the crowd.
The roughly 340 National Guard troops that were requested by D.C.'s mayor were assigned to traffic control and crowd management, not defending the Capitol. But a stark contrast. Over the summer, when the killing of George Floyd prompted thousands to take to the streets, Walker said it took minutes, not hours, to deploy the National Guard.
Was the issue of optics ever brought up by Army leadership when the D.C. National Guard was deployed during the summer of 2020?
It was never discussed.
Let's get to Rachel Scott. She's live up in the Hill tonight. And Rachel, the Capitol Police Chief has also warned that militia groups have threatened to blow up the Capitol during President Biden's upcoming speech to a joint session of Congress in the coming weeks. We've reported on that already. We obviously know they're taking these threats seriously. But as far as tomorrow is concerned, what are they doing to prepare? What's the presence there tonight?
Well, David, sources telling us tonight that the House has decided to change its floor schedule to get lawmakers out of Washington, D.C. before tomorrow. And still, an increased level of security presence here on the Capitol grounds here tonight. You have miles long of razor-wired fencing and still roughly 5,000 National Guard troops on site, David.
All right, Rachel Scott leading us off tonight from the Hill. Rachel, thank you. And now to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, the first time in front of the cameras in days, apologizing today but saying he will not resign after three women have accused him of misconduct, saying, "I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. I deeply apologize," adding, "I feel embarrassed by it." And the reaction tonight from two of his accusers, ABC Stephanie Ramos from Albany again this evening.
Tonight, after a week out of the public eye, embattled New York Governor Andrew Cuomo emerged to deliver one of his trademark COVID briefings. And when it was over, he addressed the sexual harassment allegations threatening to derail his career.
The lawyers say I shouldn't say anything when you have a pending review until that review is over. I understand that. I'm a lawyer, too. But I want New Yorkers to hear from me directly on this.
And with that, Cuomo apologized.
I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional, and I truly and deeply apologize for it. I feel awful about it, and frankly, I am embarrassed by it.
Two former aides accused the governor of sexual harassment. Charlotte Bennett says Cuomo made it clear to her that he wanted to sleep with her, saying he asked about her sex life, whether she was monogamous, and whether she had ever slept with an older man.
If they were hurt by it, I apologize. And if they felt pain from it, I apologize. I apologize. I did not intend it. I didn't mean it that way.
The governor then declaring this.
And I want you to know this from me directly. I never touched anyone inappropriately.
But another former aide, Lindsay Boylan, says the governor gave her an unwanted kiss. And a third woman, Anna Rook, who met Cuomo at a wedding, said the governor took her face in his hands and asked to kiss her.
You can go find hundreds of pictures of me kissing people, men, women. It is my usual and customary way of greeting.
Cuomo says he's not about to quit.
I wasn't elected by politicians. I was elected by the people of the state of New York. I'm not going to resign.
Stephanie Ramos back with us from Albany. And Stephanie, Governor Cuomo says he's learned, in his words, a very important lesson. And tonight you have reaction from two of the women.
Exactly, David. The governor's former aide, Lindsay Boylan, tweeting, "How can New Yorkers trust you to lead our state if you don't know when you've been inappropriate with your own staff?" The lawyer for Charlotte Bennett releasing a statement saying the governor's remarks were full of falsehoods. David.
All right, Stephanie Ramos, thank you. We're going to turn now to the coronavirus here in the U.S. President Biden blasting Texas and Mississippi for lifting mask mandates and all restrictions on businesses, allowing 100% capacity. The president calling it a, quote, big mistake and, quote, Neanderthal thinking. Tonight, Mississippi's governor just responding to the president saying Mississippians don't need handlers. At least 11 states easing restrictions in all, even with an uptick in cases and deaths in the last week. And tonight, the race to vaccinate. These time-lapse images, this is from inside the Javits Center here in New York City, getting a supply of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine now, open 24 hours a day, still by appointment. Tonight, more than 52,855,000 people have received at least one dose of the vaccine, more than 20% of adults now. But the debate, of course, raging over lifting restrictions. And ABC's Marcus Moore from Dallas tonight.
President Biden tonight reacting to news that Texas and Mississippi are lifting all restrictions and mask mandates.
I think it's a big mistake. The last thing we need is the Neanderthal thinking that in the meantime, everything's fine. Take off your mask. Forget it.
His public health officials also doubling down, pointing to another uptick in cases and deaths, with variants threatening to, quote, hijack our success.
I think that was ill-advised. It is really quite risky.
Stamina has worn thin. Fatigue is winning. Every individual is empowered to do the right thing here, regardless of what the states decide.
At least 11 states recently moving to relax restrictions.
Now, in Texas and across the country, we now have vaccines to protect Texans from COVID.
But in reality, Texas ranks 48th in administering vaccines per capita. The average daily deaths here have nearly doubled, and daily cases have increased by 75% over the last 10 days. New infections, now more than they were when the statewide mask mandate went into effect last July.
Since the vaccine is not really readily available, I just don't really feel comfortable putting all my staff at risk.
And while some celebrate,
if you want to wear a mask, you're more than welcome to. Are we going to require any of it? Absolutely not.
Others are wary.
I know everybody's anxious. I'm anxious, but I think a few more weeks, month, maybe whatever number may be, shouldn't hurt anybody.
Chef Ty Frazier tells me he will keep following CDC guidelines.
What happens when the surge goes up and then we have to shut down again?
Containing the virus crucial as the race to vaccinate picks up speed. 9 FEMA locations opening around the country today, from Pennsylvania to Florida. And at this one in New York, long lines before doors even opened.
The first day they said you could apply, I did, and I got right on.
And this is what it looked like inside the Javits Center. It can now open around the clock. That site able to vaccinate 8,000 people a day.
I got it.
David, in a meeting with the House Democratic Caucus, the president touted progress that has been made with their help, saying they have moved from a point where there was very little supply to being able to vaccinate every single adult in this country by the end of May. But David, he added, it will take time to get shots into arms.
Right, but reiterating that May timeline now, Marcus Moore tonight. Marcus, our thanks to you. And tonight we also have news on schools and teachers. The First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, of course, a teacher herself, at schools today talking about having to teach over Zoom, too. Amid the Biden administration's new push now to vaccinate teachers by the end of this month. Our Mary Bruce tonight, traveling with the First Lady.
It may be his toughest challenge yet. President Biden now racing to fulfill his promise to reopen most schools by May. His new strategy, vaccinate teachers as soon as possible.
But our goal is to do everything we can to help every educator receive a shot this month, the month of March.
It's something many teacher unions have been demanding, even though the CDC says vaccinations are not a must for them to teach in person. And today, the First Lady stepping into this fierce debate, visiting schools that have successfully reopened. Biden says as a teacher herself, she gets it.
I'm a teacher. I am teaching virtually. And last week, I said to my students, hey, guys, how are you doing? And they said, Dr. B, we're doing okay, but we can't wait to be back in the classroom.
According to one analysis, just 45% of K-12 students in the U.S. are attending in-person school every day. This Connecticut district Jill Biden visited is still a hybrid of online and in-person learning. And for parents like Emily Morales Verona, it's a juggling act.
Have you had those days where you think, I just don't know how I'm going to do this?
Every single day, you're questioning, are you doing more good than bad to your children? Are you doing what is gonna actually make them thrive, or are you hurting them? That's a tough question to answer every day.
High school history teacher Lauren Mancini Averett is eager to get back to normal, but on one condition.
What's it gonna take to get there?
The vaccines for every teacher.
You keep saying that sort of the linchpin to this is getting teachers that vaccine. The CDC says that's not a prerequisite to having teachers back in the classroom.
No, but they would feel more comfortable.
Mary Bruce out with some American teachers today. She joins us from Meriden, Connecticut, traveling, of course, with the First Lady. And while we have you, Mary, we know the other major headline tonight involving the president. about those $1,400 checks the president wants to send out to most Americans as part of his COVID package. He's now made a compromise in order to get moderate Democratic senators on board with his plan. He can't afford to lose any of them.
David, the president has now agreed to limit who gets these checks. These $1,400 payments would now go only to Americans who make less than $80,000 a year or households earning less than $160,000 a year. It is a major concession from the president to get the support of these key moderate Democrats he needs to get his COVID relief bill passed. David.
Mary Bruce tonight from Connecticut. Mary, thank you. We're going to turn now to U.S. troops in Iraq and that rocket attack on a base with troops. We have images tonight now being reviewed by investigators showing the vehicle where the rockets were launched. And we also have news on that planned trip by the Pope to Iraq. Here's our senior foreign correspondent, Ian Pannell, reporting from Iraq tonight.
Tonight, the hunt's on for those responsible for launching at least 10 rockets from this scorched flatbed truck at U.S. and coalition soldiers at Ayn al-Assad Air Base in western Iraq. No troops were hurt, but an American contractor died of a heart attack while sheltering from the attack. It's the same base hit by Iranian missiles in January last year, seen in these dramatic images just released. The president now weighing U.S. options.
We're identifying who's responsible and we'll make judgments from that point.
But an Iraqi commander at the base already pointing the finger of blame at Iranian-backed militia groups, including Khatib Hezbollah. This group also accused of attacking an airport here in Erbil last month, which houses U.S. and coalition troops that killed a contractor and injured several Americans. It triggered the first military action under President Biden, with airstrikes just across the border into Syria that killed at least one Iranian-backed militia member. At the time, President Biden warning Iran.
You can't act with impunity. Be careful.
The U.S. is wary of escalating the cycle of attacks in the hopes of restarting delicate Iranian nuclear talks.
So let's get to Ian Pannell from Erbil tonight, where despite the security dangers, the Pope will still be visiting in just a few days.
Yeah, incredibly, Pope Francis making the first ever papal trip to Iraq, something he's wanted to do for years, despite the latest attack, despite the threat from ISIS, the pandemic and insecurity in the country. David?
Ian Pannell and our team in northern Iraq tonight. Ian, thank you. And when we come back here at home, flooding tonight from Texas to West Virginia. And news tonight on the Tiger Woods crash investigation, the search warrant involving the vehicle.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
We're tracking that flooding tonight from Texas all the way to West Virginia. This is Yatesville Lake State Park, underwater in Kentucky. And spring temperatures across most of the U.S. today, you likely noticed the sun out, but now wind chills in the single digits and below zero for most of the Northeast by Friday. To the index of other news and the latest in the Tiger Woods crash investigation tonight, the L.A. County Sheriff's Department confirming now that it has executed a search warrant for the car's black box data. It could help determine the cause of the crash. The sheriff has said it appeared to be, quote, purely accidental. Woods remains hospitalized, of course, recovering from that extensive surgery on his shattered right leg. Finally tonight, the grandparents, the song, America Strong. Joel and Harmony Kaplan from Edina, Minnesota, married 50 years. Two children, four grandchildren, and due to the pandemic, they have not seen their family. But they are still singing.
All the workers on the front lines do it. Let's do it. Let's all wear masks.
In fact, they've been making videos, posting them on TikTok, Instagram.
We're going to wash this year right off of our hands.
They now have a following, and tonight, their latest.
Well, hello, viewers. It's so nice to have you here with us again.
Delivering their own news.
We're feeling swell, viewers. Can you tell, viewers? We both got our second doses of the Pfizer vaccine.
With hope for everyone else, too.
So when it's your turn, people, give it a go, people. Just say, oh no, I'm not giving away my shot.
And tonight, Joel, and yes, Harmony, sending us a message too.
Oh, well, hello, David. Well, hello, David. It's so nice to be on the news with you tonight.
It's a first, and they also wanted to say this.
We just want to tell everyone, get your shots when it's your turn. They work. It means you're going to get to see your loved ones. We can get off these screens, but keep wearing your mask.
And washing your hands.
And wash your hands. Pretty cute. I'm David Muir. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you right here tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.